भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 7, and the verses for today are text 11 and 12. So text 12 is actually on the board, interestingly enough. They both do have a purport. So since text 12 is on the board, we can chant text 12. Purvavad stapitam gopair Palidisaparochatam Viprahutvar Chayam Chakur Dadi Akshata Kushambhuvi Purvavat Stapitam Gopair Balibhi Saparochadam Viprahutvar Chayam Chakrur Dadi Akyata Kusambhubihi Purvavavatstapitam Gopair Balibhisaparochadam Viprahutvachayanchakrur Dadi Akshata Kushambhubihi. Let's chant. Purvavavadstapitam Gopair Palibhisaparochadam Viprahutvachayam Chakrur Tadi Akshata Kushambhubihi Purvavatstapitam Gopair Palibhisaparochadam Viprahutvachayanchakrur Tadyakshatakushambhubihi So I'm going to go back to text 11 to do the Sanskrit, and then I'll read both translations sequentially and word for word for 12, since 12 is on the board. So text 11. Hudantam sutam adaya yasoda graha shankita upayayat. And the translation for text 11. Thinking that some bad planet had attacked Krishna, Mother Yasoda picked up the crying child and allowed him to suck her breast. Then she called for experienced brahmanas to chant Vedic hymns and perform an auspicious ritualistic ceremony. Purport. Whenever there is some danger or some inauspicious occurrence, it is the custom of Vedic civilization to have qualified brahmanas immediately chant Vedic hymns to counteract it. Mother Yashoda did this properly and allowed the baby to suck her breast. And then we'll do the word for word for text 12. Purvavat. As the hand cart had been situated before. Stapitam. Again assembled. with the pots situated properly. Gopai, by the Cowherd men, Balibi, all of whom were very strong and stout, and who could, therefore, assemble the parts without difficulty. Sa parichadam, with all the paraphernalia kept on it. Vipra, the brahmanas. Hutva, after performing a fire ceremony. Alshayam, Chakrur, performed ritualistic ceremonies. Dadhi, with curd. Akshata, grains of rice. Kusha, and kusha grass. Ambubi, with water. And the translation for text 12. After the strong, stout cowherd men assembled the pots and paraphernalia on the handcart and set it up as before, the brahmanas performed a ritualistic ceremony with a fire sacrifice to appease the bad planet, and then, with rice grains, kusha, water, and curd, they worshipped the Supreme Lord. Purport. The handcart was loaded with heavy utensils and other paraphernalia. To set the cart back in its original position required much strength. This was easily done by the cowherd men. Then, according to the system of the Gopi Jati, various Vedic ceremonies were performed to appease the calamitous situation. Omagyanatimrandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya manopistam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. Vandeham shri guru shri yuta parakamlam shri guru vaishnavam sha shri rupam sagrajatam sahagana ragunatam vitam tam sajivam. Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavan Ishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Paramami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tiribhyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Srimati Ramapada Swami Iti Namine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasnaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So I'll read the translation once again for the verse that's on the board, which is text 12. After the strong, stout cowherd men assembled the pots and paraphernalia on the handcart and set it up as before, the brahmanas performed a ritualistic ceremony with a fire sacrifice to appease the bad planet, and then with rice, grains, kusha, water, and curd, they worshipped the Supreme Lord. beginning from text 11, because there's a sequential progression, there's immediately a generalization that Srila Prabhupada makes, and he says this: Whenever there is some danger or some inauspicious occurrence, it is the custom of Vedic civilization to have qualified brahmanas immediately chant Vedic hymns to counteract the danger of the inauspicious occurrence. So, what Yasoda had the brahmanas do is perform svashtayayana, so chanting of mantras to ward off demons. So the reason that this kind of sacrifice was to be performed is that the cowherd men and ladies had attributed the collapse of the handcart to being the work of some demon or some evil planet. Naturally, they were correct, but the demon had already been destroyed. So it's almost after the fact, but it was unbeknown to them that the demon had been destroyed, since it was a ghostly demon. But at any rate, they had analyzed that this had been the cause of the collapse of this huge cart. It was the work of some demon or some evil planet. So then the countermeasure had to be put into place. So this was, and this is Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He calls it the Svashtayayama. And this is a ritual that's performed for counteracting bad fortune. So it was very interesting finding that this is a ritual that pops up quite frequently in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the other places in which this ritual, this Svashtayayana ritual, is being performed, again, the purpose of it is to counteract bad fortune, was when the Yadavas were being advised by Lord Krishna to abandon Dwarka and perform that same ritual. And Krishna says why that ritual needs to be performed. So this is a different occasion in which the same ritual is being performed. He says, this is Krishna talking, "There we should bathe for purification, fast, and fix our minds in meditation. We should then worship the demigods by bathing their images, anointing them with sandalwood pulp, and presenting them with various offerings." So clearly it has to do with making offerings to the demigods. And so there's Abhishek that's performed for demigods, or whatever form, the deity form or images is what Krishna says. And sandalwood pulp is applied, and they provided various offerings. So this is that Svashtayayana ritual. That is the same one that Mother Yasoda is performing here. And this particular same ritual that I've just recounted, where Krishna's described it, is in his description is in the 11th canto in the 30th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. So at that time, when Krishna is recommending that this ritual be performed, there was the occurrence of very bad omens. So there was the appearance of a halo around the sun. There were small earthquakes on the earth, and there was an unnatural redness on the horizon. So in outer space, there was this unnatural redness. And this indicated that death was going to be there for the Yadu dynasty. This was the understanding. So this was some of the indications. These omens were indicating some very bad fortune coming. So it was to be the death of the Yadu dynasty. And in this particular case, the bad omen that the cowherd men and ladies were seeing was this huge cart had suddenly collapsed. And for them, actually, that cart was a worshipable object. And this is explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and I'll touch on that a little bit later. And it was that cart into which a heavy demon had entered. So two different situations. Some bad omen is there, and then this Shvatayayana ritual is performed to counteract the bad fortune that's up ahead. So this ritual is in fact an expiatory ritual, which requires the help of brahmanas. And it also includes the worship of those brahmanas, because with the ritual being performed, the brahmanas themselves, as the persons that are helping with that expiatory ritual, they will receive cows, land, gold, clothing, elephants, horses, chariots, and dwelling places. So very generous, one could say, remuneration of the brahmanas. I mean that it actually includes land, and gold and cows. So this ritual thus has an appeasing element, or there's an atoning component, because one's offering one's wealth. And also there's an opponent of giving satisfaction. Sorry, the wealth giving is the part of giving satisfaction to the brahmanas. So it has an atoning component, because one's giving acknowledgement to the demigods. And there's also a component of giving satisfaction, meaning to the brahmanas. Now, Lord Krishna refers to this Shvatayayana process as being the appropriate process for countering imminent adversity. So that's why it's described here that immediately when the cart fell apart, Mother Yasoda sprang into action. So it's countering immediate adversity, and it's sure to bring about the highest good fortune. This is how Krishna puts it. It's the appropriate, these are his words, the appropriate process for countering imminent adversity, and that it's sure to bring about the highest good fortune. So this was the recourse for the occurrence of the collapse of the handcart. So Lord Krishna himself, he spells out what that highest good fortune is that's going to come as a result of performing this ritual. And he says, such worship of the demigods, the brahmanas, and the cows can earn the highest birth for all living entities. So that's the highest good fortune. It's way up ahead. Even though it's countering immediate adversity, inbuilt is the greatest good fortune, that it's bringing about a more elevated birth just by virtue of performing that ritual. So here, there's a bad planet is going to be appeased, as the cowherd men and ladies see it, through the fire sacrifice. And in the verse that's on the board, we hear how that fire sacrifice took place. There were rice, grains, kusha, water, and curd with which they worshipped the Supreme Lord. So one can see, even though the ritual involves appropriating the demigods, the fire sacrifice is with the intent of worshipping the Supreme Lord. And so it means that the brahmanas were aiming to satisfy the Supreme Lord. this was that Shvatayayana ritual that Mother Yasoda had performed. The ceremony was for good fortune on all levels, immediate, countering adversity, and long-term. A very auspicious birth. I mean, that's what the result is of that sacrifice. So there's one other mention of such a ceremony for good fortune. It's very interesting. This has a very different look about it. This Shvatayayana, it was a ceremony that was also performed for the goddess of fortune herself when she appeared from the churning of the milk ocean So there's a description of was produced by the churning of the milk ocean. So just prior to her appearance, there were various, I think, 9 elephants that came, and then she came from the ocean of milk. So there's a detailed description of her appearance being properly celebrated, and the same Svastayayana ritual was performed. So here we get a little bit of a description of how Krishna described it, that there's bathing of the demigods, and he put to their images. Here we hear how it's actually taking place in a very detailed manner with Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. So it entailed the ocean supplying the upper and lower portions of a silken garment. Varuna, the deity of the water, presented flower garlands. Vishwakarma, a Prajapati, is supplying various decorated ornaments. Saraswati is supplying a necklace. Lord Brahma supplies a lotus flower. And the inhabitants of Nagaloka, they supply earrings. So a demigoddess, or not really, actually, I should say she's the consort of Lord Narayan, but she is actually being properly attired. So that's the part of the bathing ceremony, the proper her being properly attired and ornamented. And each of the demigods themselves are actually providing some item that would be used in the worship or in her being properly attired, just as a deity might be. So, and then we hear also that Indra brought a valuable sitting place, and each river personified brought golden water pots with pure water for Goddess Lakshmi. So the whole Abhishek ceremony was the rivers themselves bringing the water pots. So now, of course, appeasing the goddess of fortune, because she's the sole source of any opulence, wealth or beauty, isn't, of course, sufficient to achieve her favor. And this is something that Srila Prabhupada points out, because one has to recall that Narayana is always there and that she's the property of the Supreme Lord. So there has to be worship of the Supreme Lord. And so we find that indeed in this Svastayayana ritual, the Brahmin is performing it for Mother Yasoda. That's precisely what they did. With their articles of worship, their rice, their kusha grass, they did actually worship the Supreme Lord. So it wasn't exclusively worship of the demigods. So that's a very important point. So in our ISKCON temples, when we're worshipping deities, it's interesting because the worship takes the form of, because we're not getting a completely detailed description here of the Svastayayana ritual, except for understanding something of the articles involved and who's being worshipped, I thought to look more deeply at how worship is performed within our ISKCON temples. So usually there's chanting of mantras to purify the articles that are to be offered. And this is done with the purpose of removing any inauspicious subtle influences. And then there's also spiritualization of the places of worship and even of oneself as the Brahmana performing that worship, because one's needing to invoke one's spiritual identity. Because that worship has been done to the Supreme Lord, so one invokes one's spiritual identity. So generally, purification is done with sprinkling purified water and with chanting a mantra and showing a mudra. So say if even something simple as water is being offered, or it's part of the worship, then one removes any minute impurities in the water, again by mudra. There's a nice strain of mudra, so you, by mantra, you're straining the water. And also, if one's offering some sort of food stuff, then also there's one's transforming all those items into nectar through a cow mudra, the Denu mudra. So these are ways of purifying everything. And after purification, there's also spiritualization of the articles. So first the gross, you could say gross, subtle elements are removed. And then there's spiritualization of the articles, because there's chanting of Bij mantras of the deity that one is worshipping at the same time as showing the different mudras. So it's going on simultaneously. And one meditates that the Bij mantra of the deity, the seed mantra, is entering into the particular item that's been offered. So, and finally, there's an invocation requesting the Lord to be present. So in substances such as fire, when one's performing the fire yagya, or even in bathing water. So by means of mudras and mantras, one asks the Lord to be present, and one begs him to come near so that one may render him service, and one tries to invoke his form and offer him protection. So one's offering the Lord protection by the mantras. And one requests the Lord to give his blessings. Again, this is by mudras. So the brahmanas here, they are worshipping the Lord with rice, grains, kusha, water, and curd. So I would imagine it's very similar to what I've described of usage of mudras and mantra. And the one thing that's particularly important in worship is that the items that are offered, that they really are meant to please the Lord. So they have to be of the highest quality. That's a kind of requirement. So whatever it is, flowers, food, clothes, ornaments, just like we actually heard when each of the personalities came for the Swasayana ceremony for Goddess Lakshmi, each one brought one particular item because it was no doubt the very best item of that category. So Lord Brahma bringing a lotus flower, one imagines it's the very best possible lotus flower, etc. Or even the silken garments that are offered by Varuna. Since, you know, all valuable jewels come from the ocean, he's the one offering the silken garments. One imagines that they're the very best. of course, there's another component to the whole thing, and this is Krishna, how he views any sacrifice. And he puts it this way: even very opulent presentations do not satisfy me if they are offered by non-devotees, but I'm pleased by any insignificant offering made by my loving devotees, and I'm certainly most pleased when nice presentations of fragrant oil, incense, flowers, and palatable foods are offered with love. So it's Krishna himself saying it. So this very complex process of purification and spiritualization goes into wanting to please the Supreme Lord, just in terms of offering some items, the fragrant oils, the incense, the flowers, and the palatable foodstuffs. So, and this is, of course, a reiteration of what Krishna tells us in Bhagavad Gita, that he accepts the offering of his devotees because it's an exchange of love and affection. I mean, that's the beauty of it, that one has some means to express one's affection. So Krishna puts it, Patram Pushpam Phalam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadaham Bhakshi Uparitam Ajnani Prayatat Manaha. So this is his accepting leaf, flower, fruit or water, if it's accepted, if it's given with the mood of love. Now, interestingly, prior to the fire sacrifice, the cowherd men, they assembled the pots and pans back on the cart, and they set up the cart in the same position that it had been in prior to the collapse. So that cart, I'd mentioned it, and this comes from Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. He says that it was repaired. So we heard there was a description in a previous verse of the axle breaking and the wheels coming apart, everything separating. So it was repaired and was placed in its original position. And the fact that the cart had to be placed in position once again indicates that the cart was very large. So one can infer this because it required all the cowherd men to come along and reposition it. So one can infer it was large. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that it also indicates, or he says that the cowherd men worshipped the cart. And because the cart was the abode of Lakshmi, because it was the storehouse of their accumulated wealth. So their accumulated wealth was all these golden pots and pans used as part of worship. That was considered their wealth. So it's used in worship of the Supreme Lord, and they considered the cart itself as the abode of the Goddess of Fortune. So one can see that connection that Srila Prabhupada was making. You know, one isn't just worshipping the Goddess of Fortune in order to receive wealth and opulence of other kinds, beauty, whatever. Rather, one is worshipping her in relation to Lord Narayan. So here we see the cowherd men, they're using that paraphernalia for worship of the Supreme Lord. And the Goddess of Fortune, she had bestowed her favor of wealth upon the cowherd men. We've heard descriptions of the extremely extravagant way that a festival would be done, that they could actually hurl or cover each other with yogurt and curd because there was so much, and that was the wealth. So one could say that what's really very clearly visible in these two verses is the cowherd men showed their dependence upon the Supreme Lord, and that their goal in life really was to satisfy Lord Krishna. This is a request that Krishna makes of everyone, actually, that and he says that in all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So for myself, reading these two verses, I'm getting that sense that this was a complete absorption for the cowherd men and ladies. They're fully conscious of Krishna and fully dependent upon him. So all the actions they performed had that goal in mind, just to satisfy Krishna. So those are the few short thoughts that came from these two verses. If there's anything to expand our discussion.
Thank you. I don't know if this was addressed in a previous class, but it's Prabhupada mentions that the Shakatasura demon was like a ghost and he needed some body to inhabit. But a cart is not generally considered a body. It's a wooden synthesis of different elements. So was the cart, did the ghost assume that body of a cart, or he was just hiding out under the cart? Do you have any insight?
Yes, since he was a ghostly demon, indeed, as you pointed out, he needed to assume a body. And it said that he actually, entered the cart, so that was his body. And why one knows that he took that cart form as his body is that apparently it got very heavy, so the wheels were sinking into the ground. This is described by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, and perhaps is briefly mentioned previously. And so usually a cart would be too high for a teeny baby. I mean, it's not necessarily low to the ground. So the description is that because the demon had used the cart as his body and the wheels had sunk down, it brought the height down. So Krishna, kicked the wheel and the axle. Perhaps that was not said directly, but at any rate, the height of the cart decreased and the wheels went deeper into the ground. So therefore, one knows, due to that weight, that it had become the body of the demon. That was the understanding that emerged. Yeah.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna Arshana, thank you for your class. You were mentioning that you quoted that verse from the Gita, Patram Pushpam Phalatoyam, that Krishna is grateful for whatever little you give him, whether it's a leaf or a flower. And I think this is one of the most important qualities, because we see that Krishna has everything and he's still grateful. We have nothing and we're still ungrateful. In one of the previous verses, it said that Krishna was so grateful that Vasudev, while he was in prison and when Krishna was born, he couldn't give any gift to his son. So he gave all the gifts to Krishna in his mind, and still Krishna was still grateful. If we gave something to somebody in our mind, like some gift, they're like, it's the thought that counts. They're like, no, it doesn't. So anyway, this is the one of the most important qualities. I kind of like to relate this to the one of the original points I wanted to bring up in Prabhupada's purport. He mentions the word qualified brahmanas. So we hear this word a lot, qualified or qualities. And one of the most important points, I mentioned this point in class before, that there was a documentary I watched about the world's tallest buildings in Dubai. It was made out of concrete. And so then I noticed how they built concrete. They'll do a mixture of concrete. They'll make it hard and they'll put a small block of the concrete under hydraulic pressure to test the quality of the concrete. If it cracks after a little pressure, then it's considered a bad mixture. If it doesn't crack after a lot of pressure, then it's a good mixture. So we see the great saints, Haridas Thakur, Prahlad Maharaj, Jesus Christ, they were all put under very severe peer pressure and physical pressure. Haridas Thakur was attacked in 22 marketplaces. Jesus was crucified. Prahlad was killed, tried to be killed by his father in so many ways. But yet, the quality of their character never cracked. They never condemned their tormentors. Yet, when somebody in our life, when somebody just merely ignores us, the quality of our character cracks. When somebody insults us, the quality of our character cracks. Or when somebody speaks too long, the quality of our character cracks. Usually when we speak, we're so enthusiastic, but when somebody else speaks, we're unenthusiastic. There's a quote, I'll just give an example, which changed my life as far as gratitude is concerned. I never liked coming to Bhagavatam class. Only when my brother gave, because I have that connection with him, but any other speaker came, I'm like, why am I coming to Bhagavatam class? I'm not getting anything out of it. I was very ungrateful. It's very boring, etc. And then one thing that changed my life, I watched a lecture about gratitude, one of the most important qualities. There was a lecture by His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. It was called Gratitude, the Womb for Humility. So in that lecture, he said that gratitude is a quality of heart in which we can grow in every situation. He says when somebody gives us something, or when we have some association, we should think, I'm not deserving of this, but I am so grateful. And even in difficulties we go through, we should consider, I am so grateful. So basically, if I'll just use an example. When my brother was here, I was very grateful. But when he wasn't here, I was ungrateful. So what that means is that if my circumstances are depending on some particular person or circumstances, then when that circumstance or person goes away, my gratitude goes away. So there's a quote that says, bring gratitude to all your experiences instead of waiting for a positive experience in order to feel gratitude. So my question is, what are some steps we can move forward to develop our gratitude about devotees and stop complaining? Because we could go to other countries like Syria where they're being blown up every day, people are being raped, molested, and yet, you know, we complain about the most smallest thing. The quality of our character cracks, just like it's a bad mixture of concrete. So what are some steps we can move forward to increase our gratitude and respect and appreciation for devotees? Otherwise, if our good circumstances go away, our Christian consciousness go away. And in the next verse tomorrow, it speaks about the disqualification of brahmana, envy, untruthfulness, disturbance of other opulences. So it talks about the quality of our character cracking due to this lack of, you know, good qualities. So what are some steps we could do for it to increase the quality of our character and stop complaining all the time, mentally, verbally, and physically?
I see, you've jumped up ahead. That is text 13 and 15. So tomorrow's speaker is going to look at those bad qualities in particular that a qualified, or what makes a brahmana completely qualified. And that listing over here, it's extremely interesting. I mean, I didn't study this verse because that wasn't the class today, but the listing is the brahmana that's free from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbance by the opulence of others, and false prestige. So that's what a qualified brahmana needs to be free of. And I guess you were pointing out particularly the disturbance by the opulence of others. Perhaps somebody speaking and one not speaking, or some prestige aspect. So clearly, just by it being mentioned there, that this listing, one can understand that this is a pretty gradual process. It's not going to be an instantaneous thing to become, not be disturbed by the opulence of others, or having false prestige, or even carrying grudges, being unnecessarily proud. So those things mean constantly checking in with oneself. And, you know, from your just speaking, it clearly indicates that you're doing that checking in with yourself. So that's what one needs to do on the path of Krishna consciousness. One needs to check in. So one looks at and recognizes, oh, I see I'm actually being a bit disturbed by the opulence of somebody else, or I'm feeling proud with my achievement here. So one's checking in, and just by your speaking, I'm understanding that you're checking in, because you're recognizing when there's you coming up against a wall, you hitting those bad qualities that one in Krishna consciousness is trying to get rid of. So, or the getting rid of is cultivating the good qualities. So, if one is actually performing any kind of worship for Lord Krishna, just doing it with care and attention is so purifying that he takes charge of cleansing that heart. And I think we were discussing recently that there's a particular moment at which Krishna is directly removing those bad qualities, you know, that false prestige or the disturbance by the opulence of others. When one's genuinely, genuinely wanting to serve him, genuinely wanting to do it with care. So that genuineness can come about by cultivation. One just keeps going. So, you know, one mind drifts or one doesn't have a taste. One still does it, just like you were explaining. You were recognizing there wasn't a taste for the Bhagavatam, hearing the Bhagavatam class, but you continued. So this is a tribute to practicing Krishna consciousness on your part, continuing with something that one doesn't seem to have so much taste for, because it's through doing the recommended activities or trying to please Krishna that brings him his reciprocation of helping with the cleansing of those bad qualities. He's the one who does the cleansing, but one checks in and one recognizes all the time. And just the fact that one recognizes, one tries even harder to do those acts of worship with greater care. You know, greater care, greater dedication, more thoughtfulness. So, you know, you're contributing a question after a class. It's a form of service to a person that's speaking. So it's a service that you're performing in the devotional realm. So you try to do it nicely. You think about what the speaker has said, or you've looked at the verses and you've given some thought to it. So that's part of performing service. So dedicatedly proceeding with, you know, what way one is serving, it invites Krishna to help with the cleansing. Because it's not something one can fully do on one's own, but one recognizes, the fact that one's recognizing those bad qualities should increase one's fervor to come to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. I mean, an honest person recognizes the horror of those ugly qualities. They're horrific, and that one's walking around with it. So the fervor increases to come to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, because he's the one who will make amazing arrangements that can free one from those ugly qualities. So the arrangements may sometimes be a little bit uncomfortable. one may feel shaken up, but one will recognize when one's in the middle of Krishna's arrangement that it's there to remove some bad quality. And so one accepts it and goes with it, as opposed to resisting and falling back and holding on to the bad quality. So when one is in one of those situations where you can see that, you know, something's being tested in some way, don't respond with the bad qualities. You know, exercise the utmost control. And that utmost control is cultivation, just like you're doing. You're checking in all the time. You know, I see this problem, so I'm going to ask a question, how do I deal with this? I see this problem, how do I deal with it? So, I mean, you get different speakers responding, and it's a process that every one of us is going through, having to, you know, recognize those bad qualities and try harder in terms of one's positive devotional service. Yeah. And don't take shelter of those bad qualities. I mean, if one were to take shelter of, let's say, even the one of being disturbed by the opulence of others, then what would that arouse? A bad quality of dislike of a person, a whole category of bad thoughts, and generally a poor worldview, because there's no escaping from getting stuck in negativity. So clearly one doesn't want to go down that road. So instead, put the focus on one's positive devotional activities and make that, bring the mind back to that. Bring the mind back, keep pulling the mind back to that. So, yeah, that's a thought.
You are with Acharinishtha's question. So I have to share something. So when Srila Prabhupada, you know, he took in London, he took the Bhaktivedanta Manor. There were some ghosts were there at that time. Devotees experienced also it. And they complained. They told to Prabhupada. Prabhupada told the best is to, you know, chant and, you know, dance and kirtans. So then when Prabhupada came, they danced and chanted everything. Then ghost ran away, means ghost left. So here thing also we can see about the ghost, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. When he was in Bihar somewhere, he was appointed there as something. That also, there also one ghost was staying in one tree. You remember that tree? Then when he suggested to read by Srimad Bhagavatam under the tree, then the ghost left, you know. Then there was a big crack in the tree, and then he left, the ghost left. So ghost can stay anywhere, because they don't have any physical body, you cannot see. But in the temple they cannot stay. As soon as, that's why we are using the bell before the deity worship. So if any soul is there like that, no, unwanted soul, like preta, ghost, they will run away. So by the veil. So when we are entering also in the temple, we have to take little to bring the attention of deity, and also, so like that. So here in the cart, so the ghost can stay. They may be not inside the cart, maybe they are not seen to others. But Krishna could see. They can stay anywhere.
Thank you, Guruji, for pointing out that indeed the ghosts can enter into any object. So I'm giving an example of to the back to the notes according to the ghost being in the tree. Yeah. Yeah, it's part of our deity worship that even upon waking up, there's some mantras that one chants to move away any subtle entities just when one wakes up. So indeed, it's there's the awareness of ghostly living entities being present, hence the necessity to chant mantras to ward off those entities. So, and I guess this particular ceremony was that I've been highlighting that Mother Yasoda did, because of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, is specifically that it's warding off demoniac evil entities, inauspicious influences. Yeah. So that was the class today. Thank you very, very much for your kind attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.